Good morning, this is Linda, and I'll be reading the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. I'm going to begin reading off the front page out of Decatur and submitted by Valerie Wells, an article titled Mission, Hurricane Help, with the subtitle Project Linus Volunteers Aid Hurricane Victims. The Project Linus event at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on Monday officially began at 9 a.m., but by that time, the gym was already full of people sewing, cutting, measuring, and catching up with friends. I haven't seen Jane French for about a year, said Phyllis Hunt, seated at a table sewing Project Linus labels to finished blankets with her friend. We're sitting here talking while we work. Hunt joked that she volunteered for the labeling job because no one else wants it, but that's how Project Linus works. Most of the women, and some men, who showed up for Monday's workday were going to be there all day, pushing toward the goal of 200 blankets to give to children affected by Hurricane Harvey. At the end of the day, the group had produced 600 blankets and still has over 400 to deliver to their usual local recipients. The national organization's goal is 5,000 blankets. Each volunteer has her own specialty, but cranking out those cozy blankets to cheer up a child is most important. In a room adjacent to the gym, Linda Kirby cut fleece for fringe blankets while her sister, Becky Smith, worked with people sewing in the main room. Kirby began making the blankets. Her son, Brad Kirby, was killed in a truck accident in 1999. He played football for Millikan University, and his number was 35. The two sisters and their friends formed a group they call Team 35 in his honor and meet every Monday at the Mowiqua Lions Club to make blankets, with the goal of making 35 each week. They usually reach that goal, too, Kirby said. Her boys' grandmother made blankets for both her sons when they were small, Kirby said, and holding Brad's blanket gave her comfort after his death. When she learned about Project Linus, it gave her something to do to help others, and that was important to her. It saved my life, she said. It gave me a purpose. Smith has been in the hospital emergency rooms when children came in, and one in particular sticks with her. Project Linus makes soft knitted blankets for premature or gravely ill babies, and a baby came in who she was sure would not survive. She put one of the blankets over that baby, and when he died, the staff took him to the morgue in that blanket. It's nicer than wrapping them in a sheet, Smith said. Project Linus makes blankets year-round, and most volunteers work on their own at home, dropping off to finish blankets for distribution. Twice a year, the chapter holds an event like the one Monday, where volunteers get together for a work session, and they also meet for an appreciation breakfast, this year scheduled for November 30th at Hickory Point Golf Course. Nationally, Project Linus has 292 chapters, representing all 50 states. The Red Cross passed out blankets for families affected by the hurricanes, said Mary Balagna, Central Illinois Chapter Coordinator and National Vice President. But those are plain and generic blankets. The bright colors and child-friendly prints on Monday included sports themes, Snoopy, Hello Kitty, princesses, quilts, and crochet. We're the ones trying to cheer them up, said Balagna. We're never going to be partners with the Red Cross. It's just not going to happen, but we go in right after they do. Golden K. Kiwanis and several Latter-day Saints missionaries were on hand to help set up and carry in heavy items. Several volunteers are older or have mobility issues, Balagna said, and carrying in heavy sewing machines and supplies is too much for them. The men took care of that part and carrying it all out again at the end of the day. About 120 volunteers spent the day making blankets, which will be driven to Hamilton, Missouri today in a truck lent by Bill Waite of Waite's Dry Cleaners. Smith works for him, and when she mentioned the project, he asked what he could do. Shipping that many blankets is expensive, and taking them by truck with gas provided by weight, will save the chapter a considerable amount of money, Bologna said. And that does conclude that article. However, there's a little tiny small side article called Project Linus. Project Linus is based in Belton, Missouri. There are 292 chapters representing all 50 states. And for more information, you may visit www.projectlinus.org. And that Linus is spelled L-I-N-U-S. The next article is titled ISU Investigating Assault and Porn Cases. It is submitted by Lenore Sabota and Kevin Barlow to the Herald and Review and is out of Normal. Illinois State University police are investigating alleged sexual assault and revenge porn cases where, in both instances, the people met on the social search app Tinder and communicated via Snapchat, an image messaging and multimedia mobile app. Although the two incidents are unrelated, both encounters started with Tinder, said ISU Police Chief Aaron Woodruff, who has issued a campus-wide crime advisory to address the issue. While they're unrelated, the pattern of using Tinder is a safety concern, he told the Bloomington Pantograph. The Tinder app facilitates communication between mutually interested users. Woodruff said on September 7th, a student reported to the ISU police that a man she met on Tinder and communicated with via Snapchat attempted to extort her by threatening to share nude images of herself that she sent to him. A week later, ISU police were notified of the alleged sexual assault that occurred early in the morning of September 13th in the 300 block of North School Street. The male student allegedly met the victim on Tinder and communicated with her via Snapchat, said police. Woodruff said Tinder was created to some people. It was known as what I guess you would call a hookup app. It's tried to change its image to a dating app. Both incidents remain under investigation. There have been no arrests in either case, but Woodruff said his office is working with McLean County State's Attorney's Office on both cases. He said Monday that the crime advisory is meant to serve as a reminder to students to be careful when using social media. The problem seems to be if some interpret the meeting differently, he said, noting that the issue of consent comes into play. Make sure you have clear consent, he said. Sexual assault is a significant concern at college campuses across the country. The advisory included information and resources for students to help identify a potential dangerous situation. Nationwide, it is estimated that 20% of women and 6% of men experience sexual assault or attempted sexual assault during their time in college. In a study published by the Department of Justice, 82% of the victims were raped by someone they knew, and 18% were raped by a stranger. That concludes that article. Moving into the local and state section, I'm going to read an article from Decatur submitted by Ryan Voiles. The title is U.S. Representative Davis Speaks at Milliken. Human trafficking, a crime growing worldwide, is reaching the consciousness of the American public through law enforcement's efforts to find and report its victims. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, spoke at Milliken University on Monday about what lawmakers are doing to combat human trafficking and how to recognize it in a community. Dozens attended the Constitution Week discussion in the University Commons on Monday morning to learn about an issue the FBI calls the fastest growing business of organized crime. If you see something, say something, Davis said. We can get these victims help. There were 7,500 reported cases of human trafficking in the United States last year, according to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. While that number was about 2,000 more cases than the previous year, Davis said the crime is being reported more as people know what to look for. Taylor Woods, a Milliken senior from Decatur, said the presentation got her attention. I'll definitely be looking out for more signs. It's not something I typically thought about in my everyday life, Woods said. I'll definitely be looking out for it now. Laura Dean, an assistant professor of political science at Millikan University, has studied the issue of human trafficking and helped organize Monday's discussion. She said it is an issue not completely understood, both in scope and how closely it can hit home. Recently, Dean said the trend has been for traffickers to target victims in small, rural parts of the country and move them away from friends and family and into the larger urban areas. Dean said the challenge is cutting off the supply to those seeking the services of victims. If we cut off the supply of people, the demand will still be there, but it will be much more difficult to get, said Dean, noting that many victims come from broken or dysfunctional families with a lower income. The Blue Campaign, described as the unified voice, quote, end quote, of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, working with law enforcement, government, and non-government agencies to end human trafficking, said there are a number of general indicators of victims. Bullet 1, deferring to another to speak for them. Bullet 2, visual signs of physical or sexual abuse. Bullet 3, cut off communications with friends and family. And so there is an ending to that article, but the subset is human trafficking. If you suspect that a person may be a victim of human trafficking, call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Homeland Security Investigations tip line at 1-866-347-2423. And that does conclude that article. Next, staying in local and state, I'll read an article titled Bird Whisperer Hired. Subtitle, Decatur to pay $73,500 over 3 years for removal. The article is out of Decatur and is submitted by Tom Lisi to the Decatur Herald and Review. In Councilman David Horn's, H-O-R-N, apostrophe S, brief tenure on the City Council, the Millikan University biology professor has built a sort of one-man environmental wing in city government. Horn was the sole dissenting vote yesterday on a routine city contract with Soul's Bird Repellent Company, a local business run by James Soules, and that is spelled S-O-U-L-E-S, which utilizes a secret method to rid large areas of pigeons and starlings. The city has paid the company since 2002 for bird removal in the downtown area, which Public Works Director Rick Marley said has been a concern for business owners. Horn's concern does not come from the Soules family method, which has stayed a secret for decades. Instead, Horn said his issue was that no one from the Soules Bird Repellent Company showed up at Monday's council meeting to answer questions about the contract. The company did not respond to a Herald and Review request for comment. The city approved the new agreement with Soules to pay $73,500 over 3 years to keep the downtown commercial area, Decatur Civic Center, and bus depot free of the unwanted flying creatures. I think it's very important that representatives of companies that are in their contracts saying they are going to abide by all environmental laws be present at the council to confirm that. And it's important that the council be assured that, in fact, vendors are aware of the environmental law, Horn said. Horn, whose research specialty is birds, brought up similar concerns in May when Brian Critchlow of Critchlow logging company, answered Horn in a council meeting that he was not aware of the century-old federal law known as the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which sets restrictions on disrupting habitats of certain migratory bird species. In the contract, it indicated that the logger would abide by all environmental law, and I think that discrepancy has set a precedent in this Decatur City Council chambers that I am concerned about, Horn said. Though Councilman Pat McDaniel has professed himself in the past as no fan of tree huggers, quote, end quote, he said vendors who do business with the city should show up to meetings for questions. Solis should have been here, McDaniel said. James Solis and his late father, Jimmy, both of Decatur, have received its share of media attention over the years. A 2005 Chicago Tribune story dubbed Solis the bird whisperer, quote, end quote, for the family's mysterious yet effective craft. 2 years later, the state Journal Register reported that Jimmy Solis said he had Avitrol, that's spelled A-V-I-T-R-O-L, a controversial bird poison, but didn't use it for his business, and said that he had shot birds in the past, but in general did not use firearms in his work for the city of Springfield. Councilman Bill Faber sided with Horn in the vote to approve the Crichelow logging contract in May, but this time around, Horn was alone. I think my background probably makes me the most aware of environmental issues, so when these types of issues are raised, I think I'm a little bit more aware of what the greater complexities in some of these contracts are, Horn said. City Manager Tim Gleason, G-L-E-A-S-O-N, said he hasn't received any concerns from local environmental groups or any residents. I just know it's a long-standing agreement that the city has had. I believe that this was prompted several years ago by downtown business owners experiencing the waste from a large number of birds, Gleason said. And that does complete that article. The next article, staying in local and state, is titled Ex-Substitute Teacher Accused of Sexual Assault, is presented to the Decatur Herald and Review by Jalen Cook, and comes out of Decatur. A former substitute teacher, originally from Mount Zion, was extradited from Macon County to Michigan on charges of sexually assaulting a male student there, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. Allison B. Moran, and that is spelled A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, B. Moran, M-O-R-A-N, 26, was discharged to authorities from Ingham County, Michigan, at about 10:40 a.m. Monday after being held at the Macon County Jail, said Lieutenant Jamie Belcher. The Lansing State Journal reported that the alleged assaults took place in April, according to court records, and involved a teenage boy younger than 18 who attended Stockbridge High School in Michigan, where Moran used to teach chemistry and coach girls' soccer. Lawyer Daniel Reynolds, who represented Moran in the extradition, did not immediately respond to a call for comment late Tuesday. Moran last week was charged with 3 felony counts of third-degree criminal sexual conduct involving a student and a misdemeanor charge of fourth-degree criminal sexual conduct involving a student. A warrant was placed for Moran's arrest, and she was arrested on Thursday at a motel on East Pershing Road in Decatur. Police records show that Moran was arrested at about 5 p.m., on a contempt of court charge, and Belcher said a Decatur police detective assigned to the United States Marshal Service took her into custody. Macon County court records show that Moran appeared in court on Friday and waived her right to be expedited. An attorney representing her was not listed in court records. A statement from Stockbridge Schools Superintendent Carl Heidrich said that Moran is no longer affiliated with the district in any capacity, quote, end quote. She had been employed as a teacher by a staffing company, the State Journal reported. And that does conclude that article. The next article is coming out of the section titled Celebrate What's Great About Our Region. The Herald and Review each day lists a reason the Decatur region is loved. They are profiling people, places, and history that are special to our region and make it a great place to live. And today's article is titled A New Way to Treat Type 2 Diabetes from the Herald and Review. Type 2 diabetes is a growing problem nationwide and particularly among low-income populations, the primary clientele at Crossing Healthcare, a federally qualified health center in Decatur. Looking for a way to address the problem, Crossing dietitians Allison Raiha, spelled R-A-I-H-A, and Elizabeth Schuff, spelled S-H-U-F-F, came up with the idea of a prescription produce program for their diabetes patients. With help from Good Samaritan Inn's Mercy Gardens-Decatur is Growing Gardeners Program. I'm going to reread that. With help from Good Samaritan Inn's Mercy Gardens-Decatur is Growing Gardeners Program, Crossing started its own garden across the street from its health center on 320 Central Avenue and began its prescription produce program last year. Using produce from that garden, as well as Good Samaritan Inn's gardens, and food purchased from the Central Illinois Food Bank, the first year 20 patients were hand-selected by Crossing staff based on their social determinants, Raiha said. Raiha said more than half lost weight and nearly half experienced lower blood sugar. This year, the program was expanded and has 43 patients with a goal to double that. In addition to the free produce, patients are also given recipes that match that week's produce, which can include, among other things, tomatoes, peppers, broccoli, cauliflower, cucumbers, eggplants, lettuce, zucchini, watermelon, strawberries, and other fruits. Crossing also holds cooking demonstrations to show patients healthy ways to prepare the food. If you have someone in what's known as a food desert, you have to start at the bottom and prescribe produce, Crossing Healthcare Director Tanya Andricks, A-N-D-R-I-C-K-S, said. Tanya Hendricks said in 2016. You have to address that need before you can ever address the diabetes. The trajectory for those people in the program has now changed. Over time, we're hoping they stay healthier longer and have better outcomes with their diabetes and heart health. That concludes that article. But if you need to have further information, you could contact area code 217-421-7909. Now, reading from the Decatur Herald and Review's calendar of the week, we'll start with tomorrow, Wednesday, September birthday celebration, noon, Decatur Macon County Senior Center. And on Thursday, Hispanic Heritage. Slam Poetry, Hispanic Heritage Month at 7 p.m., Millikan University. And at the Little Theater on the Square, the being presented by the students of the Future Stars program will be Madagascar, a Musical Adventure Junior. This is slated for November 10th through the 12th. Tickets are $10.40 for children and $12.50 for adults. For tickets, you can contact area code 217-728-7375 or thelittletheater.org. Returning back to the front page, I'm going to read an article out of Little Rock, Arkansas, titled Blocking Public Records Access. This is submitted by Andrew DeMillo and Ryan Foley from the Associated Press. The subtitle is Recent Laws Hinder the Freedom of Information Act. In February, Arkansas lawmakers marked the 50-year anniversary of the Freedom of Information Act with a resolution calling it a shining example of open government, quote unquote, that had ensured access to vital public records for generations. They spent the following weeks debating and in many cases approving new exemptions to the law in what critics called an unprecedented attack on the public's right to know. When they were finished, universities could keep secret all information related to their police forces, including their size and the names and salaries of officers. Public schools could shield a host of facts related to security, including the identities of teachers, carrying concealed weapons, and emergency response plans. And state capital police could withhold anything they believed could be detrimental to public safety, quote unquote, if made public. While hailed by lawmakers as common sense steps to thwart would-be terrorists or mass shooters, the new laws left grandmother Annie Bryant worried that she and other parents could now be kept in the dark about how schools protect kids. I don't want to be overly aggressive to the point that we block out avenues and end up robbing parents, robbing students of information about their safety, said Bryant, who lives in Pine Bluff and spoke out against the school security secrecy during a legislative hearing. Lawmakers across the country introduced and debated dozens of bills during this year's legislative sessions that would close or limit public access to a wide range of government records and meetings, according to a review by the Associated Press and numerous state press associations. Most of those proposals did not become law, but Freedom of Information advocates in some states said they were struck by the number of bills they believed would harm the public interest, and they are bracing for more fights next year. Nebraska lawmakers debated whether to keep secret the identity of the suppliers of lethal injection drugs used in executions. The California legislature rushed through a measure that shielded from the public the emergency action plans required for potentially unsafe dams, an idea that arose after nearly 200,000 people were forced to evacuate following a spillway failure at the state's second-largest reservoir. Texas again considered a plan that would effectively shut down its public records law to any requesters who live outside the nation's second most populous state. In some cases, the bills hit resistance only after reporters caught on and began writing about them. In Iowa, the House passed a bill to shield the audio of many 911 calls by declaring them confidential medical records, quote unquote, after the AP used the open records law to expose a series of gun-related accidents involving minors in one rural county. The plan died in the Senate after it was detailed in news reports, and media and civil rights groups raised objections. Days later, the potential impact of the bill became clear when a beloved state celebrity, farmer Chris Solis of The Bachelor fame, was charged with leaving the scene of a deadly accident. A 911 call that would have remained confidential under the bill painted a far more sympathetic picture of Solis's actions, showing he immediately reported the crash and sought aid for the 66-year-old victim. Lawmakers supporting the limits say other concerns such as security, privacy, and business interests can outweigh the public's right to information in some specific cases. We're going to wrap up part one of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, September 19th, 2017, and I hope that you'll return to listen to us on part two after we take this short break.